This is a WATD Political Forum on 95.9 WATD. Online at 95.9WATD.com. Now, live from Studio B, here's your moderator, WATD's Christine James.
Good evening and welcome to a WATD Political Forum. I'm your moderator, Christine James, and I'm joined by WATD reporter Tom Gorman here with me asking questions. This election race is for the state senate for the Plymouth-Barnstable District. We have both candidates here in studio. We've got Democrat Dylan Fernandez and Republican Matt Moratori here to answer questions. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
And timing you all is our own Charlie Fulmer, and we're joined by our media partner, Local Scene, PAC TV. Now, of course, with timing, as we were going over this right before we went on the air, when you see these cards, green is go, yellow means you have 10 seconds, and red is stop. And if they're still talking on red, you get the 5-second grace countdown, then you get the bell. If you're still talking, then we cut your mic. So that's the way the timing works, and we try to run it pretty strict with that. Now, the format is simple. We've asked our candidates to have prepared opening and closing statements ready. The opening, no longer than 2 minutes, and the 1 minute, please, for the close. Then we have a round of questions from us, the reporters. The answers are limited to a minute. And then a lightning round where answers are either yes or no or two sentences tops, and we will ask what we want, whether we want the yes or no or two sentences tops. We always tell people, please try to keep your answers to around a minute, as we just told you. If you consistently go over, ramble, or start to repeat yourself, then you get the bell. Now, we chose the opening and closing order out of the official WATD stand-in newsroom koozie. So we're going to begin with the opening statement from Dylan Fernandez. Then we're going to go to Matt Moratori, and then we reverse that at the end. And if you're not sure if this is your state senate district, Plymouth-Barnstable District is Plymouth, Kingston, Pembroke, Plimpton, Bourne, Sandwich, Mashpee, and Falmouth. So good evening, everybody, and let's open with Dylan Fernandez.
Well, thank you for hosting. Thank you to my Republican opponent, Matt, for being here as well. I'm Dylan Fernandez. I'm a lifelong resident of our district. My family came here from Portugal 4 generations ago and worked on strawberry farms in the district. My father started a small business and worked his way out of poverty, and I became a first-generation college student studying economics in undergrad and then getting a master's in public administration from Harvard. And so I got involved in public service to give back to the community and country that I love and that has given me so much. And I've brought that energy for helping others to the legislature, where I've passed 30 laws, brought reproductive care for women to our region. And I've been a leader on preserving our environment, passing bills to protect clean water. I'm a proud local public school graduate from a small business family, so I know how important it is to support public education and housing for local residents. And look, there's big issues here, too. Women's reproductive freedom is under attack in our country. I'm the only candidate who supported the Roe Act to protect women's ability to make health decisions about their own bodies. And we need someone who can deliver for us. Decisions made in our district in the next few years will decide our fate for the next century, especially around Holtec and the Cape Bridges. I'm a candidate who's passed several pieces of statewide legislation and have a track record of delivering millions of dollars for our region. I was born here, raised here in our district. I think it's the most beautiful place on earth, and we must preserve it. And I want everyone who lives here to have the same opportunities that I've had. So I humbly ask for your vote.
Thank you. That was the opening statement from Dylan Fernandez, the Democrat. Now we've got the Republican, Matt Moratori, your opening statement.
Thank you, Christine, and to Tom and Charlie and PAC TV, the Local Scene, for hosting this forum. We really appreciate it. Again, I'm Matt Moratori, proud husband and father of 6 beautiful daughters and a beautiful granddaughter. My wife, Kristen, is an elder law and estate planning attorney out of Plymouth. As a former co-owner of local daycare company and now current partner in a senior living consulting firm, I'm able to gain a keen sense of the needs of the working families and seniors. I'm grateful to have served the town of Plymouth as a state rep for 10 years, and prior to that, as a member of the Finance Committee and the Select Board in the town of Plymouth. Currently, I serve on several Plymouth boards and organizations, including PAC TV, BID Plymouth Hospital, Rotary Club, Plymouth Area Chamber of Commerce, and the Plymouth Area Regional Economic Foundations. And these experiences have given me a great deal of sense of the community. As a state rep, I serve on various legislative committees, such as Committee on Small Business, Municipalities and Regional Government, House Ways and Means, and Healthcare Financing. Additionally, I've been appointed to many task force and commissions during the last 10 years, including Plymouth County Substance Abuse Task Force and the Commission on Human Trafficking, State Commission on the Status of Persons with Disabilities, the Northeast Fire Protection Commission, and the Non-Emergency Human Service Transportation Task Force. I've just recorded my 2000 vote and have built relationships across the aisles with colleagues throughout the Commonwealth to pass legislation to improve mental health, housing opportunities, education, and legislation to fund the Commonwealth's infrastructures. This election is about bringing a balance of power and common sense legislation to state government. It's about solving the migrant crisis. It's about making Mass affordable so people don't leave Mass. And it's about electing someone who has a municipal, business, and state experience to hit the ground running. Thank you for the incredible opportunity you've given us and for considering me to continue to serve as in the State Senate and for the Plymouth and Barnstable District.
Thank you very much. That was Matt Muratore with his opening statement. And for this evening tonight, we're going to begin with our own Tom Gorman. Questions for the candidates.
Well, as you know, the migrant issue has really taken off here in the country and right here in the South Shore as well. If elected, how would you address this?
Let's start with Dylan.
Sure. Well, look, I support comprehensive immigration reform in this country. I think we have a real problem at our southern border that needs to be fixed. I think, but when you look at federal laws around immigration, they're all at the federal level. Controlling our border, controlling the asylum process, any type of visa process is at the federal level, the immigration courts at the federal level. And so, you know, the state has to manage what it can with the tools that it has, and it has very few because these laws are at the federal level, but we've taken action on this to manage it at the state level. We reformed the Right to Shelter program in Massachusetts. We've ended the Right to Shelter permanently for people. Now it's just 9 months. And then people, if they want to get a month or so longer, they have to be a worker. I got provisions passed within this to give veterans preference in our shelter program. And look, I think it's on the table going forward for further reforms as well.
Okay, same question, Matt Muratore.
Yeah, so I think I do agree that this is a federal issue, and it does need to be taken care of at the border. However, the right to shelter law really hasn't changed all that much. What it's done is, as Dylan has said, it does give 9 months in your shelter, and then you have another 90 days if you're not out by then. But it doesn't stop it on the back end of it, so people are still able to come into the shelters. The right to shelter law that was passed in 1983 was meant for Massachusetts families that live in Massachusetts to get shelter if they need it. And what's happened now is we're still having people come in on that end of it. So as people leave the shelters, more coming in. So I'm the only one in this race that's voted to, you know, put a residency requirement on it, that you have to live in Massachusetts for 3 months or 6 months or 9 months or 12 months. Voted against the over $1 billion worth of funding for this and making priority for families in Massachusetts as well as veterans as well.
Okay. And I just want to do a follow-up here. This issue, besides affordable housing, is what we get the most emails and phone calls about. People are really upset about this issue. I think they feel that resources are going for migrants and aren't going for permanent residents of the state. Dylan, do you think that that's accurate?
Yeah, well, two things. One, we looked at reforming this to change it so that you have to be a resident or you have to be a citizen. Mm-hmm. Both of those run afoul of the constitutional in terms of the 14th Amendment and in terms of the Equal Protection Clause. We were given that. So if you put together, and there's a lot of case law, other states have tried to do that, and they've been shut down by the Supreme Court. Other states have tried to put down a residency requirement, and it runs afoul of the 14th Amendment and the Equal Rights Clause. You can't take away rights from other citizens in other states. This has come up recently during COVID and elsewhere. So we've looked at this. I think it was on the table, but ultimately it would be unconstitutional and end up costing our state more money in lawsuits. We need to reform this now. And so, you know, I voted to reform it. My opponent voted to defund it, which wouldn't have just put out migrant families who are largely Haitians, who are TPS holders, but also families that are longtime residents.
Okay, same question, Matt.
Yeah, just to correct the record on that. No, I voted for funding for the families that live in Massachusetts. That funding is in the budget. What I voted against was extra funding for the migrants coming in. So, but to answer your question on the spending, because that's the real question, the reforms. I don't agree with the reforms that they're against. They're against Constitution and all that. We're the only state with the end the right to shelter law, so we can amend it any way we want to do that. However, to answer your question about the funding, yes, it is taken away from other programs, and that's what we keep hearing about an awful lot. And it's really taken away from people that really need housing, people that live here that need housing. And that's the biggest thing we're hearing. But it's also taken away from some social service programs as well, because when you're spending $1 billion plus on something like this, it's got to take away from somewhere.
Okay, let me ask you another quick follow-up on this. Is there a part of this issue that's not being addressed that you see something has to happen to? Dylan, is there a part of this that you're not hearing about, that's not been addressed, and you think needs to happen to make this situation right?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think we need comprehensive immigration reform in this country, no question. You know, if we serve at the state level, if I had been in Congress, I would have voted for the bipartisan bill that would have allowed the administration to close down the border, given us more border security agents. You know, this is a real issue of national security as well, and reform the asylum and visa process. These, to me, are very reasonable things. We need to manage with what we have. I think defunding the entire program that would have impacted local residents who've been here for a while, and people who have, you know, it's largely Haitian immigrants that are here currently. Technically, these immigrants are here legally under the TPS program. That's a common misconception, but Haiti is a collapsed state, and they're here under that TPS asylum program that was put under, I think, the Herbert Walker Bush administration, actually. So, you know, more reform is necessary, and we'll look at this going forward.
You knew I'd get to that, Bill. Matt, what's the missing part of this puzzle?
So he keeps talking about national, but I look at the district here, and I look at the Commonwealth. And the issue, what we can control is the right to shelter law. That's what we can control. The funding, again, I'll correct you, Dylan, on this. We voted for funding for like $350 or $370 million for shelters for the people that live in Massachusetts. What we didn't put in this fiscal year budget is the extra $1 billion that the governor wanted for that. That's what we didn't put in. So I think by not funding it and by also putting a residence requirement on it, as I keep saying, I think that will help. That will help stop the flow of people still coming in when the shelters start emptying out.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break here and be back. You're listening to A Political Forum. It's the Plymouth Barnstable race for the state Senate. Dylan Fernandez and Matt Moratori in studio. We'll be back right after this.
Can't get enough of everything pumpkin this fall? Have you been looking high and low for the perfect pumpkin to decorate your home? Look no further. Head on over to UCC Norwell's annual Pumpkin Patch Fundraiser. We've got a gorgeous selection of pumpkins and gourds awaiting you. We're open every day in October at 460 Main Street in Norwell. For more information, visit uccnorwell.org.
Brockton's sesquicentennial celebration continues with the Brockton Fall Festival on Saturday, October 12th at City Hall Plaza from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. This free, family-friendly event includes retail and nonprofit vendors, children's activities, entertainment, food, fun, and live music with Keanu Trinidad, Vicki Lynch, and Renee Ann Band. Hope to see you on Saturday, October 12th at City Hall Plaza as we celebrate the community spirit of Brockton at the Brockton Fall Festival.
Looking for a great time for a great cause? Join Cardinal Cushing Centers and the exceptional people with disabilities that they support at their free Fun Run and Harvest Fest on Saturday, October 26th. First, register now at CushingFunRun.org and follow the easy prompts to ask your friends and family to sponsor you. Then arrive at 10 a.m. on October 26th for the pre-race party, followed by the one-mile event. Bring everyone, adults, kids, dogs, strollers, wheelchairs. What a great opportunity to teach about inclusion. Halloween costumes are encouraged. Again, register and start fundraising now at CushingFunRun.org. That's CushingFunRun.org.
WATD's Political Forum continues now.
Back to Studio B. Here's your moderator, Christine James.
Back in the studio again. We just took a break, and it's the Plymouth Barnstable race for the state Senate seat. Both candidates here in studio, Matt Moratori and Dylan Fernandez. Before we went to the break, we were talking about the migrant issue, but we are going to go to some other issues as well. Tom Gorman, questions for the candidates.
This fall's election, there was a ballot question about eliminating the MCAS as a graduation requirement. What is your feeling about that?
Let's start with you, Matt.
Yeah, I'm looking at all the questions now. I have 1 and 5 already set how I'm going to vote for those. 2, 3, and 4 I'm still debating about, but I'm really leaning towards yes on the MCAS. And I'll tell you why. I have to take it away as a requirement for graduation, not to get rid of it altogether, but take it away for graduation. I have, as you know, 6 daughters. Have all, you know, most of them gone through this MCAS. And the stress they go through, and my kids are smart kids, you know, they're 4.0 and above. But the stress they go through to this, it's just not right. And then what the teachers go through as well is just not right. So I'm kind of leaning that way right now.
Same question, Dylan?
Yeah, I actually agree with Matt. And, you know, we need to be supporting our students. We also need to be supporting our teachers. I'm not in favor of scrapping all testing. I think testing does a good job of providing metrics on how students are doing, how schools are doing. I think that's really important data so that we can help students and teachers get extra resources in some areas where students might be struggling. So I'm supportive of testing. This is just a pretty narrow focus in eliminating the graduation requirement. That doesn't mean that you automatically graduate even if you fail the MCAS. And this only comes down to less than 1% of students. So then it's up to the administrators, public school teachers, who know these students well and can make a strong judgment call based on the full body of work of the student and not just one test.
Do you guys think you could pass the MCAS if you had to take it?
Probably not.
Yeah, but Dylan?
Yeah, I think I could pass the MCAS.
I've seen, I'd be stressed out. I've seen some of those questions. I'm thinking, well, this is a little tougher than are you smarter than a fifth grader?
Tough.
But some of them are pretty tough. All that stuff you didn't remember from high school. Yeah. Okay. Speaking of ballot questions, number one, the state auditor's authority to audit the legislature. On the Massachusetts statewide election ballot, a vote yes on question one would allow the state auditor to audit all the departments, offices, commissions, institutions, and activities of the state legislature. A no vote would oppose the measure. Dylan, are you for this or against
it? Yeah, I'm supportive of audits of the legislature. I think it's important to bring transparency to the legislature. And in my time as a rep, we've made some really good reforms there. Anytime you want to watch session, it's live. And we've actually expanded it, so now that anytime you want to testify on a bill, all the hearings are public. You can tune in from anywhere, and then you can actually testify from anywhere in the state. And that's a huge, a big win for transparency and being part of the political process for our district, because now people can call in from their couch, you know, down on the Cape or right here on the South Shore and make their, and take a stand on certain bills. So, look, I think this is important. I do think it should be an independent audit, and we should make sure that there's independence involved, so it's not just devolves into political bickering.
Okay. What about it, Matt? What do you think?
Yes, absolutely. Matter of fact, when I was first elected in 2014, we were working on public records reform, and the public records laws have not been reformed in 40 years. I was on the conference committee for that with then leader Mariano, now Speaker Mariano, and those meetings were open meetings, which usually don't happen, from what I understood. But this is like my first time being there. I was like, this is wonderful. Our conference committees were open. We had the press there. We had people there. And it was wonderful. And one of the issues we had at that point was this, to audit the legislature. And I've been in support of that since back then. It didn't go through. It's the only thing that didn't go through. But I wanted to do it back then. I want to do it now.
Well, let me ask a follow-up question then, and I hope you don't mind me jumping in again, Tom. But when we talk about the way things happen, transparency on Beacon Hill, I think it was this year, this session, something like 7,000 bills filed at the beginning, and it seems like it's always a fight to get even a handful of things passed into law. What do you think needs to change in the state legislature with the way that bills are put through and passed, if anything? Do you think it's a good process?
I think the process is good. I think it's heavy-handed from the leadership. So leadership really decides what bills actually can go through and what bills don't go through. I mean, that's basically how it works. It's not the right way to do it. I wish it was more open because, and I think we've talked about this in the past, too. There's a lot of bills out there that are common sense bills that, you know, seem to make a lot of sense, so why not pass them? I know Dylan and I worked on the Ocean Acidification Commission together. Dylan chaired it, did a great job with it, and there was a lot of legislation in there that we thought made sense to pass, but mm-hmm. it just doesn't pass. So I think, you know, the leadership, I think, needs to be more open to, you know, getting things that make sense passed.
Okay. Dylan, what do you think about this? Do you think things need to change the way bills are put through with the state legislature?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of my biggest frustrations in the legislature is the pace of change. And, you know, I want to see more get done. We did a lot of big things this session around housing, around, you know, universal school meals for kids, around free community college. A lot of big things did get done. But too often, you know, the end of session, a couple of bills just fall apart. And that needs to change. There needs to be a more thoughtful cadence so that it's not just coming up at the end of session. And look, I'm one of four Democrats that voted to put term limits on the longest serving speaker in Massachusetts history a few, you know, years ago when the longest serving speaker was there. And so I don't mind standing up to my own party when I think it's the right thing to do to create change at the State House.
Oh, I jumped ahead. I thought it was already on red, but no. You're safe, sir. Sorry. Thank you. Tom Gorman, questions for the candidates.
In recent years, some communities have complained that the state aid formula is unfair, the way funds are allocated. Do you agree with that?
Let's start with you, Dylan.
You know, I represent nine municipalities. None have reached out about state aid funding. But look, I think this is an important issue generally about bringing home money back to the district. That's something I've been really successful on in the legislature. This past legislative cycle, I brought down $2 million just in state budget funding alone to the district. That's considerably more than my Republican opponent. And so being able to deliver money for the district is hugely important. I'm open to change. The nine towns that I currently represent, none of them have come to me with changes that they would like to make. But the towns that I'm running in, if they came to me with changes, I'd certainly fight for them.
Same question, Matt Moratori.
Yeah, it's been the formula has been in place for decades. When I was first appointed to the Finance Committee in 2005 in Plymouth, we discussed it back then. When I was on the Board of Selectmen in 2010, again discussing it then. I think it really does need to be looked at. I think putting a commission together to study it to see what's the best way to do this formula. But I do definitely think there needs to be reforms on it.
Okay. Did you want to follow up with that? This was this came in, and excuse me if I'm not completely up to snuff on this, but this story came in through our State House News Service right before we went on the air here, saying that Governor Maura Healey plans to immediately implement a sweeping gun reform law, in the process blocking opponents who appear to be on the verge of suspending the law for more than 2 years until voters get their final say. Now, State House News says a spokesperson for the governor said Healey will sign an emergency preamble for the law finalized this summer, allowing many provisions to take effect right away instead of on October 23rd, which is 90 days after the governor signed the law. Now, the move will put much of the law into place immediately and push off the table the temporary suspension that opponents were eyeing as they pursue a 2026 ballot question to repeal the wide-ranging measure. I want to know, do you agree with this or not, Matt Moratori?
Absolutely not. And this is one of the issues I keep hearing, too, knocking doors. We've knocked close to 12,000 doors now. It's this whole transparency and balance of power. And this is what happens when you have an absolute power from one party. We need to get more Republicans in. We're never going to control as Republicans. But having four Republicans out of 40 in the Senate and having 24 out of 159, it's not acceptable. You don't have a fair playing field with two teams on the field. And this is the type of thing that happened. The reason this is happening now and not waiting the 90 days, like 99% of most bills wait 90 days to be implemented, is because there's a group out there getting signatures to try to stop it from going through for right now and just holding on it for 2 years so they can get a ballot question in 2026. And they almost have the signatures. They need about 50,000 signatures, so they almost have them. Mm-hmm. And that's why this is being stopped. It's just wrong.
Okay. What do you think about this, Dylan? Do you agree with this, what the governor's doing?
Yeah, I mean, emergency preamble isn't that rare in the legislature, but look, I think it should go. I'm fine with waiting the full 90 days for implementation, and I agree with Matt on that. And look, I also think, you know, it brings up balance of power. That's a big part of why I'm running for this district, is because if Matt gets elected, he'll be one of five Republicans in the state Senate. Has no power. No power to pass major laws, no power to bring home money back to the district, and it'll leave our district without a voice at an incredibly important time. The decisions made in the next few years in this district are going to affect us for the next century. When you think about Holtec, when you think about Cape Bridges, when you think about affordability and climate change. And so it is so important that we have someone who has a seat at the table where decisions are made, who can advocate for our district. And that's why it's really important to that, and a big part of why I'm running, to be that voice for us at the State House.
Okay, since you just took a pot shot at Matt, I'll give you 30 seconds.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, first of all, I've had a seat at the table before you were elected. I've actually worked across the aisle. I've taken in multi-millions of dollars in one town, not nine communities, one town, over my 10-year career. Passed over 20 bills in just one town, not nine towns. So I've been very effective working across. I'm one of the most respected state legislators there is because I can work across the aisle and work with people to get things done. I've had a proven record of that.
We're going to take a quick break and come back right after this.
Thank you.
Something wickedly good is happening in Plymouth October 19th. Join us at Memorial Hall for the Jeff Cohen Charitable Foundation's 28th annual Halloween benefit, a night of fun, fright, and fundraising all to support cancer patients in need. Enjoy live music, dancing, delicious treats, and a thrilling silent auction. Don't forget, the best costume of the night wins a $1,000 cash prize. Tickets are on sale now, but hurry, they're limited. Want to make an even bigger impact? We're seeking generous sponsors and auction items. Your support can change lives. Visit the JCCFoundation.org to grab your tickets, become a sponsor, or donate an auction item today. Let's make this Halloween a night to remember together. See you there if you dare.
Hi, I'm Kelly with Veterinary Chaplaincy Services. Our mission is to support people after pet loss. If you're looking for support after losing your special companion, please visit our website at veterinarychaplaincy.com or call or text our new warm line at 833-4-VET-CHAP. That's 833-483-8247. 833-483-8247.
Brockton's sesquicentennial celebration continues with the Brockton Fall Festival on Saturday, October 12th at City Hall Plaza from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. This free, family-friendly event includes retail and nonprofit vendors, children's activities, entertainment, food, fun, and live music with Keanu Trinidad, Biggie Lynch, and Renee Ann Band. Hope to see you on Saturday, October 12th at City Hall Plaza as we celebrate the community spirit of Brockton at the Brockton Fall Festival.
WATD's political forum continues. Now, back to Studio B. Here's your moderator, Christine James.
That's right. We're back in studio, and it's the Plymouth-Barnstable State Senate seat. We just went to break before we were talking about the gun issue. We're going to jump to another one now. We're going to check in with Tom Gorman, and then we're going to go back to some of the ballot questions. Tom.
Well, as you know, the Pilgrim Power Plant is still undergoing cleanup and dismantling by Holtec. And Holtec has been wanting to discharge some of the wastewater into Cape Cod Bay. What are your thoughts about that?
Let's start with you, Dylan.
Well, we need to hold Holtec accountable for what I view as public health and environmental safety negligence. It's like whack-a-mole with this entity. But look, this is something that I've been a leader on, worked with the Association to Preserve Cape Cod to identify the Ocean Sanctuaries Act to the administration so that DEP could rule to shut down dumping this waste into Cape Cod Bay. I have concerns about how it impacts our tourist industry here. And I'm actually one of 10 petitioners currently. This is kind of relatively new news with the Association to Preserve Cape Cod petitioning against Holtec's appeal to DEP. So I've been a leader on this. We'll continue, if elected, to hold Holtec accountable.
Same question, Matt.
Sure. So again, going back to 2005 when I became a member of the Finance Committee, I've been working on this power plant for 20 years now and have, you know, it pretty well inside and out. In the past, there has been discharge of water into the into Cape Cod Bay when they refueled. But I do agree with Dylan that, you know, we need to hold their feet to the fire. I think the entire delegation from Cape Cod South Shore has been saying no more dumping of water in the bay. A lot of it is also perception of it as well. Because it will kill the economy, because, you know, people have that a perception that, you know, this water is contaminated, and it is to a certain degree. But let's keep in mind, it's a Nuclear Regulatory Commission that actually controls all this. And I was a leader with our delegation years ago to bring NDCAP to the state and get Governor Baker to focus on this. The state has never been focused on this power plant until we got Baker to do it and do this NDCAP to actually oversee this process, and that's how we got the state involved.
Let me ask you both a quick follow-up question for this. If you had to summarize, let's say, in two or three sentences, like an elevator, you know, your elevator speech, what do you think that Holtec's mission really is with this cleanup of Pilgrim? If you had to say, what do you think it is? Give me three sentences.
Their mission is to clean it, to get it to virgin ground. But their main goal is to save as much money as they can.
Okay. Dylan, what do you think that their mission is with Holtec?
I think what they're doing is trying to get out of public safety regulations, public health regulations, and do it as cheaply as they possibly can. And so we need to hold them accountable and protect the people of the South Shore and the Cape.
Okay. Now let's switch to
follow up.
Yeah, please.
What do you think should be done with the site once it is cleaned up?
Dylan, what do you think?
I think, I think this is something that's really interesting and on the table. This is a lot of land here. And so I think there should be, you know, a commissioner group that looks at what is going to happen with it. And my understanding is that's going on currently. And so there's opportunities, I think, for preserving some of the land for nature, for to have a preserve. And I think there's opportunities for economic development on the site as well that could bring jobs, bring tax base, bring more opportunities to the region. So I think it's an exciting opportunity for the town and for the region.
How many acres is that?
It's about 1,500 acres.
Oh, it's really? Oh,
yeah,
goodness.
Yeah, it's good size.
Same question.
Yeah, and the town of Plymouth just recently did a deal with Holtec to have right of first refusal on the land. And I do think the town of Plymouth should be the first ones to take a crack at it to see what they want to do with it. And I do believe they will get the community involved with it to see, as Dylan said, what, you know, preservation, economic development, whatever they think it should be. But, you know, again, this isn't going to happen for years now. Because of the delays that are being caused by Holtec.
The MBTA Community Zoning Act, another thing that's gotten an issue that's gotten a lot of towns riled up. Milton led the revolution saying, no, we don't want this. A lot of towns have voted against it, including locally. I think it was Marshfield, Norwell, maybe it was Hanson. I'm not sure. I could be wrong about that. But I know Marshfield, Norwell, they've got town meetings coming up where they're going to vote on it again. Do you believe the MBTA Community Zoning Act is a good thing, and do you like the way it's implementing it or trying to threaten towns that don't want to go along with it?
I think there's a lot of good parts to that, and I actually voted on it when it came out to have that. The part about going after towns, though, I think is disturbing, that the Attorney General is going after Milton and Marshfield. I don't think that's the way to do it. I'd like to see people kind of sit down and talk it through. I'll give you an example of Plymouth when it first came out. As you know, Plymouth has a T station at Cordage Park, and there was already 300 units of housing there. And it was those houses were built, and another 350 being planned. And those were built because of the train station there. Mm-hmm. We got 40R. We got money for workforce grant money to actually do the infrastructure for it under 40R. And that's why it was built. So we said, okay, now that this has come out, can we at least grandfather those in? And we were told no. Plymouth was told, no, you can't grow. Now you've got to find where you can go more housing. And you know, North Plymouth, it's pretty tight with housing. So, but Plymouth has been able to try to figure it out somehow how to do it. But there's 77 communities, I think, that are involved with it that are struggling to figure out how to do it.
Okay, what do you think about? What are your thoughts about the MBTA Community Zoning Act, Dylan?
Yeah, well, there's no question that our state's in a housing crisis, and we need to do more to support people for workforce housing and give more opportunities for housing for people. The vast majority of the communities have complied with it. And, you know, I think communities can get creative around, if they have a housing person, around where they zone places so that it's actually not too big a detriment to the community. You know, I agree with Matt that, you know, I don't think there needs to be such a heavy hand around this. And I've actually voted to put some reforms and tweak it in areas. One piece I've voted to tweak it around was around water quality, making sure that if new units are getting built under this law, that they have the proper wastewater available for it and proper water reserves for the projects. Because, yes, we need to build housing to support people. We also need to protect our water quality and our environment.
Let me ask you a quick follow-up and ask Matt the same one. Do you think there's a chance that they're ever going to open up that Cordage station? Every time I drive by there and see all these great places to live in, it would be so convenient, literally walk out your front door and get on the train. Any chance you think they're going to bring that back?
I don't know. I mean, I think this is, you know, there's obviously opportunity there, but this is something that should be left up for the local residents to decide and local leaders. And so I think if there's, you know, overwhelming support for that, we can work with the administration to get something done. But that call has to start at the local level.
What about, may I think, well, any that, chance they're going to open
yeah,
up?
Yeah, that call's already happened. I mean, the town wants it. The people want it. Again, the housing was built there. We have two colleges that are there. It's built for that. We have ongoing discussions as a delegation with the MBTA and the Healy administration. Before that, the Baker administration. It's looking very grim that it's going to open. But we are looking at, okay, so what can we do for transportation then? If you're going to keep Kingston open and you want to keep Plymouth closed, what can you do for transportation? Maybe get GATRA to actually transport over to the T station from Plymouth. So that some of that may be looking at. I mean, we're still going to keep trying, but the last conversation we had about 2 months ago, it didn't seem like it was something they were interested in.
Roughly, do you know how much money they were talking about, how much it would cost?
I don't know how much money it would cost, but there's a lot of a lot of the tracks have to be redone and redesigned and all that. And really, if Kingston ends up closing, I know there was some discussion a year ago about maybe Kingston wanting their train station closed so they can put housing there or something. If that happened, then they'd have to look at Plymouth, but it doesn't look like that is. So,
anything else you want to add about that, since we're talking about trains, Dylan?
Sure. I support train access. I think it's an incredibly important tool to get cars off the roads and improve transportation in our state. I think there's additional opportunities for train access in our district. I actually have legislation filed to bring a train down to Buzzards Bay. Right now, commuter rail is accessible there in terms of the track already being upgraded. All they would need is a feeder train down to Buzzards Bay, and that would feed into the South Coast Rail Project, which is now finally getting underway. Mm-hmm. So now for the first time, we can actually open up more train access to people in our district. Really important. Get cars off the road, reduce carbon emissions, create more economic opportunities for people. And this is legislation I have and something we've been advocating to the administration.
Tom Gorman, questions for the candidates.
Recently, a large number of people and even some businesses have been leaving Massachusetts due to the high taxes and high cost of living. What can the legislature do to reverse that trend?
Matt?
Yeah, I think, and I've said this before, small businesses are the backbone of our economy, and we need to do more tax incentives for small businesses. I think overall, we did a great tax package reduction for about $1 billion back in 2023, and I think we need to do another one next year. We are seeing, you know, not only businesses, but people, retired people leaving the state. We see young people that come to our universities and colleges with the best in the country leaving. They're not staying because they can't afford it. And this is the other number two issue that we keep hearing about is affordability. And but it does start with a small business. We have to be more friendly to small businesses and help them thrive because they are, again, the backbone of our economy.
Same question, Dylan.
Yeah, I have to support small businesses. I grew up in a small business family. Both my parents started their own small business. And I was supportive of the $1 billion tax cuts that we did. Really important piece. I pushed for changes to our estate tax. Senator Sear and I both had legislation around that. We used to have the most onerous estate tax in the nation at $1 million. And it had a cliff effect. So you just got over $1 million, you were taxed on the whole thing. That is hugely costly, given how much home prices have risen, so that it was really impacting middle-class families. And so now we doubled that and ended the cliff effect. So now you're only taxed on the third $1 million of your estate, and that really takes out a lot of middle-class families. Another thing we carved out for our region was around the septic tax credit. This used to be $6,000. Now it's $18,000. You can get a zero interest loan on top of that. That's a really important piece in this tax bill to allow people to have septics and improve water quality.
Thank you. We're going to take a quick break and come back and talk about affordable housing. You're listening to 95.9 WATD.
Can't get enough of everything pumpkin this fall? Have you been looking high and low for the perfect pumpkin to decorate your home? Look no further. Head on over to UCC Norwell's annual Pumpkin Patch Fundraiser. We've got a gorgeous selection of pumpkins and gourds awaiting you. We're open every day in October at 460 Main Street in Norwell. For more information, visit uccnorwell.org.
Looking for a great time for a great cause? Join Cardinal Cushing Centers and the exceptional people with disabilities that they support at their free Fun Run and Harvest Fest on Saturday, October 26th. First, register now at cushingfunrun.org and follow the easy prompts to ask your friends and family to sponsor you. Then arrive at 10 a.m. on October 26th for the pre-race party, followed by the one-mile event. Bring everyone, adults, kids, dogs, strollers, wheelchairs. What a great opportunity to teach about inclusion. Halloween costumes are encouraged. Again, register and start fundraising now at CushingFunRun.org. That's CushingFunRun.org.
AM Radio provides always-on news, sports, talk, traffic, and weather reports. And it's also a vital service that provides important emergency information when your community needs it most. Tell Congress you need AM Radio to stay in your car. Because when cell phones and the internet are down, this free emergency service is critical. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress we need AM Radio in cars.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
WATD's Political Forum continues. Now, back to Studio B. Here's your moderator, Christine James.
We are back in Studio B here with the Plymouth and Barnstable State Senate race. Both candidates in studio, Republican Matt Muratore, Democrat Dylan Fernandes. Both of them state reps. Both of them want to become the state senator. Right before we went to break, we said we were going to talk a little bit about affordable housing. Again, an issue we hear from a lot of people. And your district is unique. In fact, it's on, you know, four towns are on the Cape, four towns on the South Shore. And there's not only the issue of affordable housing for people that live here all year round, but because of so many beautiful towns and near the water and a resort area, seasonal workers. I remember, you know, 1,000 years ago when I was in college with a summer job on the Cape, it was still expensive then, but now it's just like, I don't know how anybody can afford to work and live on the, especially on the Cape or even in Plymouth for the summer if you're coming, or maybe to work on the farms. What, Matt Muratore, what can happen? What needs to happen?
Well, first of all, we're about 200,000 units of housing below where we should be. But we have put some policies in place. We've voted some bills into place over the last few years that are going to help all that. It's still not going to be enough. It all goes to supply and demand. It's all about supply and demand. We need more supply of housing, you know, and that's the bottom line for this. And again, more affordable for workforce housing, I think we need, and seniors as well. You hear that all the time. There's not enough senior housing for people to live affordable. So I live 5 minutes from the Sagamore Bridge, so I see both sides of it. Land is more available on this side of the bridge. We, you know, particularly in Plymouth, to help do all that, and the Cape side, that there's not a lot. There's not a lot of land available. I think the ADUs, the accessory dwelling units, the small ones you can build on people's properties, will help that tremendously. But there's more we need to do.
Okay, what do you think, Dylan? What needs to happen to help with this affordability issue?
Well, there's a lot. And lack of affordability is going to erode our communities far faster than the ocean will if we don't get a handle on this. A lot of people are struggling. A lot of people I'm in my mid-30s, have given up. And even seniors who want to downsize are having a hard time. There's good news. We passed the Affordable Homes Act. This is the largest housing bill in a generation, putting millions of dollars towards housing to build more housing, to help people with rents and other forms of assistance, to help veterans with housing. And we carved out a specific component in it called the Seasonal Communities Designation, which allows for a new office in the state government to issue special regulations around seasonal communities because the housing there is unique and different. And this is a difference between me and Matt. I supported the housing bill, the Affordable Homes Act. Matt is actually the only Republican, only politician, both Democrat or Republican. There's two Republicans, two Democrats that voted against the housing bill. I think that's a really extreme position to take, and we should be supportive of this bipartisan approach to housing.
Okay. 30 seconds, Matt.
Yeah, thank you. So I voted against it, Dylan, because that bill was voted on at 4:30 in the morning on August 1st before the full text of the legislation was even shown. We had nothing to read. And so that you go to talk about transparency, that's transparent issue right there. So we all, as Republicans, voted against it because and you voted for something you couldn't even read. There was no text on it. So that's why I voted against it. I do like the parts. There's a lot of good parts of the bill, though, that I think are going to help.
Sorry, 30
seconds, Dylan.
That's actually just not true. Yeah.
It is
so
true.
David Vieira, Republican. Stephen Exaros, Republican representative, voted for the housing bill. They supported it. So I don't – that's just factually inaccurate. And I supported it. I'm a Democrat. Kathy LaNatra, a Democrat also within this district – supported it. It's a bipartisan bill. So
without getting the text of the bill to read.
Let him finish.
We need to make sure that you know, we have housing available for people. This is the biggest issue facing our district, and the fact that Matt voted against it, voted against affordability for seniors, working people, veterans, is a huge problem.
Okay, a minute, Matt. I want you to tell me what you could bring to this affordability issue that's unique, that would be your idea. And then I'm going to ask you the same question.
Well, first of all, I just want to say that the bill, now that I've been able to read it, after the vote was taken, we finally got the text of it to read it. And yes, there's a lot of good things in it. And we do need to make more affordable, again, for seniors and workforce housing. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot of good things already in there that are going to help with that.
Okay. And anything unique that you can add to this?
I don't know what more we can do at this point, except, okay, you know, maybe help with more grant funding to help with some of this for developers to help get some more of this workforce housing done.
Dylan, do you have anything unique that you would think you could bring to the table?
Yeah, I think there's a lot more we need to do for housing. You know, one thing that I've filed for a number of sessions and want to get passed is a first-time homebuyer savings account. This will help first-time homebuyers save up for a home. It's a savings account that's tax-exempt. A lot of people struggle to save for that 20%. To put down on a home. If they don't have that, they have to pay mortgage insurance, which is really just a payout to the banks. No one wants to pay that. So this will help first-time home buyers. We need to do a lot more around the seasonality of housing. And so if elected, I want to work with the administration to establish this new seasonal communities regulations that we've put forward and were so important to getting passed. And, you know, we need to put more funding towards veteran housing as well. That's something that I've long been supportive of. That was a big part of this Affordable Homes Act as well. And so, you know, there's a lot more that we can do. And this is a good step forward, but we got to stay vigilant.
Tom Gorman?
We've heard a lot about climate change, how it's causing rising seas, rising tides, and coastal erosion. What can the state do to help coastal communities protect against that?
Dylan?
So, you know, we could get to net zero today in Massachusetts, and the seas are still going to rise 2 to 6 feet. Storms are going to get worse. We've seen just what happened in Florida and North Carolina, really devastating effects. So we need to do a lot more around coastal resiliency. We passed the Municipal Vulnerability Preparedness Act a few legislative cycles ago to help municipalities prepare to see what's vulnerable, see what's not, see what no matter what you do is going to be gone in the next, you know, decade or two, so the communities can make those decisions in an intelligent way. And then we need to put more funding towards that. There's an environmental bond bill coming up next session, so that's where more funding needs to go around resiliency. And these should be nature-based solutions. That means restoring our rivers, restoring our estuaries, doing things where the water can come in a natural way. And, you know, we had an environmental bill that came up this session. I voted for it. Matt voted against the environmental bill.
Same question, Matt Moratori.
Well, let's take the last part first. So there have been 18 environmental bills that you and I have voted on since we've been together. That was the only one I didn't vote on. And again, a lot of it had to do with taking away local control. And I heard from my municipality that they did not like that at all, taking away local control. They want to be involved and have part of the, be part of the discussions. I do agree with coastal resiliency. That's the biggest issue that we see, particularly in Plymouth and the coast of the Cape Cod as well. We're losing homes because of this, and we've got to tackle it. It's unfortunate that we weren't able to get the environmental bond bill through session before we end it. It was a big bill. There's a lot of great stuff in there, but I hope it does come back again early part of next year so we can get that passed as well.
Okay. Opioid crisis, drugs, constant. We hear Plymouth County has done some good things, some unique things that they're actually copying in other parts of the country to try to get a handle on this, maybe because we're not hearing as much about it. Still present in just about everyone's life. Everybody knows somebody who has dealt with it or has a family member. What more could we add to the tools that we have to deal with this opioid crisis? Yeah. Matt?
I think we need more treatment programs, and we did pass a bill a year or two ago that really helps with a lot of this. We need more mental health providers as well. We need more treatment beds. We need more workers that can help with treatments. We have a great center in Plymouth that was put together from funding from the state. I think we need more of those to get those funded and those up and running as well. I think the biggest thing, though, is we have to continue to talk about it, because when we don't talk about it enough, it goes back ahead of people's minds. But it is still a big issue out there that we do hear about a lot that we need to keep talking about.
Same question, Dylan, but the opioid crisis.
Yeah, and just to clarify one thing Matt said, we actually didn't have an environmental bond bill this session. Governor never filed it. She's going to file it next session. But on the opioid piece, you know, this is something that's really personal to me. There are, when I ran in 2016, a friend of mine was part of our campaign and took pictures on my literature. He's since passed away due to this epidemic. I've lost a number of friends through this. I kind of grew up in the time when it was just hitting. And so it's a really devastating problem. My family's worked in this for, 30 plus years in this space. We need to do a lot more in terms of giving beds and treatment options. And we do need to do a lot more on harm reduction. That's actually been the biggest bright spot around this. The reason that opioid deaths are going down, or at least a large part, is because of the availability of Narcan to overturn overdose deaths.
Okay. Well, we're going to go to the lightning round now, where we will ask you either a yes or no question or a question that's two sentences tops. Do you have any lightning round question? Well, of course, the first question, which is traditional through this election cycle. Plymouth County government, stay or go? Matt Moratori.
Stay.
Okay. Plymouth County government, stay or go?
Stay is fine with me.
Okay. There we go. Ballot question 4. I don't know much about this, about limited legalization and regulation of certain natural psychedelic substances. Two sentences. Do you agree with this or no?
I don't. I think this is too much right now. I have legislation that does this for treatment, specifically for veterans.
Okay.
There's been some really good bright spots around treatment for depression and PTSD for veterans.
Okay. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm leaning a no on that one. They're talking about mushrooms. And be able to grow mushrooms in your home. And, I think that we need more regulation around it first.
Okay. And then what's the biggest issue you're running on, Matt? Two sentences.
The migrant crisis and affordability and transparency.
Okay. What's the biggest issue you're running on, Dylan?
Well, I'm going to be someone who's always protecting women's right to control their own bodies. And a distinction in this race is around the vote for the Roe Act. I voted for it, my opponent against.
Two sentences. If you had to move to another town in your district, which one would it be? in the Plymouth Barnstable State Senate, Matt?
Well, interesting. So my wife's family's from Falmouth. They've lived there for 50 years.
Is
so
that your answer?
I'd say Falmouth. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Plymouth.
Okay.
Matt and I can house swap.
I used to live in Falmouth, so I like Falmouth.
Let's go to our closing statements now. We're going to reverse the order. So we began with Dylan, then went to Matt. So we're going to go with Matt and then go to Dylan.
Great.
Closing it, 1 minute.
Great. Thanks again, WATD, for hosting this forum, PAC TV as well. We're facing unique and challenging times in our communities. Working together, we can overcome so much to be stronger as a district. There is still such much work to do, such as solving the migrant crisis, creating tax cuts to make mass more affordable and competitive, increasing mental health and substance abuse services, supporting small businesses by providing tax incentives, protecting our environment and the Cape Cod Bay, along with creating meaningful, affordable, and workforce housing. The opportunity to serve this community has been an honor and a privilege. I'm proud of all that we've been able to accomplish in Plymouth, and I now want to bring these accomplishments, knowledge, and experience to the other seven communities. There is so much work still to do, and I ask for your vote on November 5th so that I can continue to be the voice and advocate for the needs of the residents of Pembroke, Plimpton, Kingston, Plymouth, Sandwich, Bourne, Falmouth, and Mashpee. Together, let us keep progressing forward. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. That's Matt Moratori, the Republican. Now we're going to go to the closing statement for the Democrat, Dylan Fernandez.
Thank you for having me. You know, what you do in this election matters. It matters because our state has big decisions to make, big challenges to meet. Our district, the people of Plymouth, Mashpee, Bourne, Falmouth, Sandwich, Plimpton, Pembroke, and Kingston deserve to have a voice in how these decisions are made. And I've spent my entire life in this district. I plan to raise my family here. If you send me to the state senate, I'll be your voice loud and clear every day on schools, on the environment, on housing, on keeping government out of women's health care decisions. In my time in the legislature, I've passed 30 bills from idea to law, some just local, but other on big statewide initiatives around our environment, the economy, and transportation. I like Matt. We're buddies, but we also have clear policy differences. He voted no on the ROE Act and no on the housing bill this past session. And I'm always going to be someone who supports for women's reproductive freedom, someone who supports making housing more attainable, and protecting our environment. So I ask for your support this election, and you can always learn more at dylanfernandez.com.
Thank you. You've been listening to a political forum here. It's for the Plymouth Barnstable State Senate race. I'm Christine James. I've been your moderator. Tom Gorman asking questions. Charlie Fulmer timing us. And, of course, our media partner here tonight, PAC TV Local Scene. This will be up on our website tomorrow. Tune in on election night. We'll be here bringing you all the results. Remember, get out and vote on November 5th. If you don't vote, you don't have a voice. I'm Christine James, 95.9 WATD.